Hey, we've been working through the book of 1 Corinthians, and we're in the middle of a series now called I'm Glad You Asked. Answering some of life's tricky questions is our aim there. And if you were with us last week, Pastor Justin answered the question, hey, if can I do what others think is wrong if I believe it's right? If you missed that, I would encourage you to go to the YouTube channel and give that a watch. And while you're there, you might as well subscribe to our channel, follow us on Facebook and Instagram so that you don't miss out on any of these things that are coming down the pike through the week and on Sundays. But if you were following us on Facebook, you probably saw a question there this week. Why are there so many hypocrites in the church? Has anyone ever asked you that? Have you potentially asked that question? There's a lot of good answers for that. And one of them will be, well, that's the best place for them, right? And those things. And you're not going to tackle that really deeply today. What I am going to do, I'm going to twist that a little bit. And I want us to investigate a little bit of a different question along the same vein. And that's this. Am I a hypocrite if I behave differently around different people? If I behave one way over here with this group of my friends, and I behave a different way over here with this other group, am I a hypocrite? It's a deep, deep question. But before we get there, I want to give you a little bit of background to help you catch up. See, last week, Paul was talking to the believers in Corinth about giving up their right to eat meat offered to idols at the temple restaurant. Paul even went as far to say, hey, I would become a vegetarian if I had to stop from offending someone that might think that's a problem. Paul goes on now in chapter 9 to lead by example. That was very important to Paul. He tells them twice in this letter, he says, follow me, imitate me. So it was important for Paul to not just tell them what to do, but to actually give them an example. And he illustrates this by explaining he has given up some of his rights as an apostle. Look at verse 15 of 1 Corinthians chapter 9. It says, yet I have never used any of these rights, and I'm not writing this to suggest that I want to start now. See, the Christians at Corinth had been comparing their leaders. You may remember that from earlier in the year when we were talking about that. They were comparing Paul and Apollos and Peter, and they had their favorites. And some were even discounting Paul's apostleship. They were discounting his ministry completely. So Paul felt a need to defend his ministry, and he's done that a few times through here. So then he starts building the case. He says this in verse 1. He says, am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Haven't I seen Jesus with my own eyes? And then basically, is it not my work among you evidence enough? The fact that you are followers of Jesus is because of my ministry. You should understand that I'm an apostle. And then he goes on to say, as an apostle, I should be able to expect, I have the right to expect from you food, lodging, and finances, and if I had a family, for you to take care of them as well. Paul says, he gives examples. He says, just like a soldier has his needs met, a soldier has his uniform, he has his equipment, and he goes off to war, he is funded by someone else. Just as a farmer gets to eat the fruit of his vineyard, a farmer gets the best fruit. They get the first fruits of the crop, and hopefully they give that to God, but then they get to eat what they grow. And then he says, a shepherd gets to drink the milk from the sheep that he's watching over. They all have that right. Then he goes on and gives an Old Testament example of an ox. He says, the ox treads out the grain, and you shouldn't put a muzzle on him. You need to let him eat. And then Paul, as if he thinks he needs to, he says, was this written for the ox? Well, the ox can't read, obviously. So this was written for people. So Paul's whole point here is that as an apostle, he was entitled to be cared for by them. But then Paul says this, he says, I give up those rights. Essentially, Paul's saying, I don't want anyone accusing me of preaching for a prophet. I don't want anyone to accuse me of peddling the gospel as a ware that I'm trying to sell to other people. He said, actually, it's not even my choice. This is my calling. I am compelled that I must be preaching the gospel. Money or no money. So he's refusing to take money. And he said, I'm not going to start now. I'm not telling you all these things as a hint for you to start paying me. So all that's in the first 18 verses of chapter 9. And I would encourage you to go back and read that yourself. Look at that in your small groups and ask lots of questions and enjoy going through that. But today we're going to start really with our focus on verse 19. It says this, for even though I am a free man, with no master, I have become a slave to all people to win many to Christ. He says, I am free. Nobody owns me. No one has authority over me. I have an audience of one, and that's God. He says, but I choose, I willingly, I voluntarily put myself into subjection. The language he's using, he says, I have by my own choosing become slaves to all people. So that I might win some. Late Martin Luther summed this up well in a very thought-provoking proverb or statement. He said this, he says, a Christian man is a most free lord of all, subject to none. A Christian man is a most dutiful servant of all, subject to all. I think he summed that up well for us. You know, Jesus taught this same principle, and he exemplified it in his life. In Mark chapter 10, he says this, but among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, in the world, in our culture and society, in the society of the day where Jesus was, that fighting for your rights or demanding your rights was a priority. And wanting position, wanting recognition, wanting power and fame was important. People strove for those things. Jesus said, flip that over. My followers are called to be different. My followers are called to live differently. If he says, if you want to be the greatest, you need to be the greatest servant. You want to be first, you need to be the greatest servant of everyone. And then by example, he says this, no greater. Or I didn't come to serve, to be served, but to serve others and to give my life as a ransom for many. His example was to lay down his life as a servant for you and I. As I think about that, and I think about what Paul's saying here, he's giving his life as a servant for all, voluntarily, willingly. That's sobering. That's humbling. I don't know about for you. But as I think about that, what does this look like for Paul in Paul's life? Being a slave to all people. Well, actually, Paul says pretty much, I'm a bit of a chameleon. I kind of blend in with whichever crowd I'm hanging out with at the time. Now that brings up our question for the day. Am I a hypocrite if I behave differently around different people? I'm glad you asked. Am I a hypocrite if I behave differently around different people? 1 Corinthians 9, verse 20, Paul says this, when I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to win the Jews to Christ. When I was with those who follow the Jewish law, I too lived under that law. Even though I am not subject to the law, I did this so I could win to Christ those who are under the law. He says, when I was around Jewish people, I behaved like a Jew. In fact, he said, pretty much, I wear the hat, the little yarmulke, I don't eat ham, any other pork, and I do the rituals that they do, and I behave. I follow the customs and traditions that they follow. In Acts chapter 16, he took this to an extreme one time. He was traveling with Timothy. You may have heard of Timothy, of someone Paul had discipled in the Lord, and he pastored a church in Ephesus. But as they were traveling, they were going to the synagogue, and Paul realized Timothy hadn't been circumcised. So he had Timothy circumcised in order to fit in with the Jews, because the Jews were going to be spying out to find out if they were really Jewish or not. And don't ask questions about that. I don't understand what the Jews would have been on about in spying out. But anyway, Paul said, Timothy, you need to be circumcised. Big sacrifice for Timothy, I would say, in that one. But Paul also, in Acts 21, paid for and participated in a purification ritual with four other Jewish believers to demonstrate to the Jews that he was not trying to get other Jews who had become Christians to just abolish or abandon Moses and the law, that he was trying to show that those could be compatible. So Paul looks like a Jew, talks like a Jew, he acts like a Jew, unless, look at verse 22, when I'm with the Gentiles who do not follow the Jewish law, I too live apart from the law so I can win them to Christ. But I do not ignore the law of God. I obey the law of Christ. So when I'm around Gentiles, and by the way, Gentiles are anyone that's not Jewish, that's the rest of the world. Paul says, when I'm around Gentiles, I behave like a Gentile. I ignore the Jewish laws and the rituals just like they do, because I'm not bound by them. So Paul says, when I hang out with the Jews, I act like a Jew. When I hang out with Gentiles, I act a little bit differently, but wait, there's more. Verse 22, when I'm with those who are weak, I share with their weakness, for I want to win the weak to Christ. When I'm with those who are weak, I behave accordingly. If we go back to chapter 8, we would learn that those that are weak were those who did not believe they could exercise their freedom. So Paul says, when I'm with people who do not believe they can exercise their freedom, I'm going to restrict my own freedom. I don't exercise my freedom around them because I don't want to cause them to stumble. So to this point, we see right now Paul clearly admitting that he changes up his behavior depending on who he's with. So as you look at that on the surface, we've got a couple of things possibly going on here. Either Paul has multiple personality disorder, or maybe there's a little bit of hypocrisy going on here, or maybe there's another option. It's fair to ask the question again, am I a hypocrite if I behave differently around different people? So as you look at Paul and you're asking, isn't that hypocrisy? Shouldn't he be authentic? Be who you are. Be guided by what you believe. Well, hypocrisy, the word hypocrisy means to say you are something or behave, act in a way that tells people you are something you are not. Okay? Is that what Paul was doing? Well, did he behave differently around different people? Yes, he did. Clearly. He was actually, I think, a little bit proud of that. Does that mean he wasn't genuine and authentic? Does that mean that he was claiming to be something he wasn't? No, I don't think so. See, when Paul says, to the Jews, I became a Jew, he went in and he went along with their customs, their rituals, and their traditions. He didn't feel like he had to. He didn't have to obey the law. But was it wrong for him to obey the law? Of course not. The law is not wrong. It's just that he didn't have to obey. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about, is it about what I have to do or what is helpful to do? See, Paul is practicing the law of love. It's more helpful if I behave like a Jew. I'm not telling the Jews I agree with them. I'm not renouncing my freedom. I'm just putting my freedom aside for that moment. See, Paul was very consistent. It's very consistent to see Paul's actions and what he believed and how they match up. He was not a hypocrite. His belief dictated his behavior, because this is what he believed. He believed that his message was too important. The message was too important to let his methods become an obstacle. Did you get that? The message was too important to let the method become an obstacle. That's why he would adjust his behavior depending on who he's with. See, Paul, far from being a hypocrite, Paul had developed a remarkable ability to contextualize, to take the current situation he found himself in and to bring the gospel into that in a way that people could understand, in the way that people would be able to receive from their own perspective. We've all heard the saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? Well, I was sharing this passage with a friend, a very dear friend this week, and he asked me what I was preaching today. And as I shared it with him, he challenged me about moving to the western suburbs. He said, Stan, you moved to the western suburbs, and have you adapted? I said, what do you mean, Mark? Hi, Mark. He said, well, you lived in the northern suburbs, and you barracked for Essendon. Now that you live in the western suburbs, you see where he was going with this. And I must say, I believe that he's taking this contextualization just a bit too far. And I reminded him that there are heaps of people in this area in Windham, friends in our that are in our church together here that are Essendon fans. So no, I'm not switching. I'm not becoming a Geelong supporter because I live in the west. Sorry about that. But hey, if it might help people come to Christ, I would actually consider it. You know, missionaries get this and they adapt. I remember on a trip many years ago, I was in an Asian nation and in a context that is predominantly Muslim. And I was with a worker there, a global worker there, and we went out for lunch. And when we went out for lunch, it was straight from the airport. He took us to this place and it was a side road little, you couldn't call it a cafe. It was a roadside stand. And anyway, so we got our food and he said, okay, we're going to pray and I want you to do it like me. And he put his hands together there and he said, keep your eyes open. We kept our eyes open and we prayed and we thanked God for the food. And he said, now, when we're done, you take your hands and then you, like you're dumping it on you and then run your hands down your face. He said, we do that because that's the way they pray here. Even people who aren't followers of Jesus yet pray that way. That's what they do. So to fit in into their culture, we can pray that way. We're still praying to God. We're still praying in Jesus' name. But physically, the actions that we did supported the culture that we were in. Does that make sense? So missionaries get it. They adapt. Wonder why we don't sometimes. We expect missionaries to adapt and fit in with the culture. Do we adapt as Christians? Why? Why would Paul allow himself to be, he probably called a hypocrite, considered a hypocrite? Why would he restrict his freedoms that were his rights? He didn't have to put himself under somebody else's rules. He said this five times. He said, so that I can win people to Christ. Five times in that paragraph, the word for win is kardeno. Used five times. And then in verse 22, Paul changes it up. In verse 22, he uses a different word. He changes from winning people to win people to a word called sozo, which means saving people. In verse 22, it says, yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. See, Paul understood something here. The reason that language changed, that was the most important thing, is saving people. See, he understood that what was at stake here was not simply winning people to our side, but changing people's eternal destiny. That's what Paul saw as important. The stakes were too high to not change the methods to match the moment. See, it's not that Paul was wishy-washy on his theology. Paul was solid in his doctrine, and we've got heaps of writings from Paul that we are very rich for having, that we understand more of who God is and the plan of salvation because of what Paul wrote. But he was willing to be flexible with the methods because his primary focus was on winning people to Christ. That's what was important. Too often in Christian circles and church circles, which obviously I'm a part of, many of you are a part of, we end up debating these finer points of doctrine. And we end up separating about over our theological position. We divide over things like modes of baptism and gender roles and whether or not we're reformed or not, or how reformed we are. You know, friends, can I just say, I think if we were more concerned about people being transformed than reformed, we would hit the mark a lot more often. And by the way, that's not a shot at my Reformed friends. I've got lots of Reformed friends that would say the same thing. We need to be on about transformation rather than reformation. This becomes a distraction, and we waste so many times, days, weeks, hours, months, years, dividing. Some estimates say there are over 21,000 evangelical denominations in the world. You know why? Because we all like a little different flavor. And if we can't find the flavor we want, we'll create an all brand new flavor. It might be fun with lollies and ice cream, but with faith, it really shouldn't be that way. See, winning people to our brand of Christianity should never be the goal. Seeing lost people find their way to Jesus should be our primary aim. See, that's what drove Paul. And that's why he would use whatever method necessary to see people saved. He said, I want to connect with people. I want to find common ground with people. He connected with people where they were. In Acts chapter 17, we see him at Ephesus, and he's looked around the city, and he comes back and he tells them, hey, I looked around the city and I saw all your shrines and your goddesses and everything. And I saw this one shrine that was to the unknown God. And he said, let me tell you who that God really is. You didn't even know it. See, he connected the dots. He met them where they were and then connected the dots to God. See, Paul would modify his habits and set aside his preferences. Paul would adjust his entire lifestyle if anything caused someone to stumble, to be offended, or to be hindered from faith in Christ. That's the way Paul lived his life. He sums it all up at the end of chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians. It's taken him three chapters to talk about food offered to idols. He says this, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Don't give offense to Jews or Gentiles or the church of God. I too try to please everyone in everything I do. I don't just do what is best for me. I do what is best for others so that many may be saved. So what's in this for me? What's in this for you? Theologian David Pryor said this, Paul's versatility in seeking to win men of all backgrounds to Christ challenges us to cross the culture gap between the Christian subculture of cozy meetings and holy talk and the pagan culture of our local community. The task of identification with and incarnation into our contemporary paganism of all kinds is one of the biggest tasks confronting the church. Wow. Wow. How do we be all things to all people? What does that look like? Those are hard questions, and there aren't easy answers. I was considering our current context and how it illustrates this whole thing. A lot of people are really upset because our freedoms have been so restricted. A lot of people think that's just wrong, and in some places in the world, there's even protest and on the verge of riots because people's freedoms, their rights, are being trampled on. What if, though, those people would think about it more like, what if I freely give that up so that we can literally save some lives here on this earth? I don't know what you think about the restrictions, and I'm not going to tell you what I think about them. But friends, fighting for our rights is not the way to win people. If we take this to the eternal realm, I have to ask the question, what attitudes do you have? What attitudes do I have that would be an obstacle for people coming to faith? Maybe it's your view of other people's religions. Sometimes it's weird. Sometimes it's awkward. When I had to pray that way in that Asian nation, in that Muslim context, I found that awkward. Wasn't sure what to do. Maybe you view their sinfulness and, oh, I can't hang out with them. They're too sinful. Pastor Justin talked about that a lot last week. Maybe it's how you view your own freedom and your rights. Friends, for those that may want to use this passage to like it's the open door for participating in anything and everything you want to do that's sinful. Let me highlight for you that Paul said, I became all things to all people. Every illustration of that Paul used was restricting his freedom, not flaunting his freedom. Then what attitudes do you have? What actions in your life could cause people to reject Jesus? You know, I really believe that when people understand who Jesus is, they're not offended by Jesus. Many times it's our actions that they can't understand, they can't get past, that cause them not to come to Jesus. I don't know about you, but I pretty much want to do anything short of sin to reach people who are lost. I really do. Whatever it takes. Maybe it's adapting our styles. Maybe it's releasing our preferences. Maybe it's just spending time with people who don't yet know Jesus. Often, as believers, we end up with spending our whole time in our Christian bubbles. Maybe it's restricting your freedoms. What is it for you? What attitude do you need to change? What action do you need to change? Sum this up today. Send you away. I said it like this, and you can say it with me. It'll be there on the screen. Don't be a hypocrite. That would be sin. Giving up our rights to see people saved, now that's a great win. Let's say that together now. Don't be a hypocrite. That would be sin. Giving up our rights to see people saved, now that's a great win. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for those that are watching and listening online. And Lord, I just pray now that you would help us to understand the freedom that we have in you. Thank you for your grace and your goodness to us that gives us that. Lord, help us know how to live that out in ways that are helpful, not hurtful, in ways that attract people to Christ, not repel them from him. Lord, thank you so much for your love for us and for your love for the lost, and give us a passion. Help us burn with you for them. In Jesus' name, amen.